We began this hour considering the impact of energy consumption on human life, and we end by remembering how 200 years ago, energy and light came from the oil of whales and the mad bravery and cruelty of the men who would risk their lives to kill the huge beasts and bring the oil to civilized drawing rooms in London and New York. In 1820, a Nantucket whaling ship called the Essex was on a routine expedition for oil when it was suddenly struck by a whale and destroyed. Only a handful of the crew made it back to civilization, and their stories of fate, fear, and cannibalism would eventually serve as inspiration for Herman Melville's Moby Dick and documented by historian Nathaniel Philbrick in his book In the Heart of the Sea. Philbrick's best-selling book has now been adapted to the big screen after many years. It stars Chris Hemsworth as first mate Owen Chase and is directed by Ron Howard.
A whale, sir. It stove the ship.
What?
We lost Easton and Sanborn.
The pumps are useless, sir.
Prepare to abandon ship.
We can't row our way home. We'd have to strip her of her sails and jimmy-rig something.
I shall gather as much food and water as he can carry.
Philbrick wanted the Essex story to convey just how frightening and exciting it must have been on a whaling ship.
Whaling was tough. It was a factory ship going to places that normal ships didn't, so you were always dealing with the unknown. And you had to kill 40 to 50 whales. And, you know, these are the biggest creatures on the planet. You not only have to kill them, you then have to chop them up into blubber, boil it down. It's a dirty business. But the assumption is you kill the whales. With the Essex disaster, the whale incredibly turns it around on them, and they became a prey. And so it was almost an existential question, you know, what was going on? Had God turned the tables on us?
What was the sense of vulnerability as you tried to imagine it as a writer of being out in the open sea with limited ability to even know where the heck you are?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that's, I think, amazing to us in the 21st century. We're so insulated from the world by our technology. You know, we have Google Maps to lead us places. We just have all this. These guys had nothing. They had their navigational instruments, but quickly those became pretty much worthless to them, given the conditions of the whale boats. And they knew their latitude, you know, where they were going.
Right.
But they didn't really know where they were, so to speak. And so the amount of not knowing, the amount of, you know, we just got to keep trying to stay alive is amazing. And, you know, and these guys were not like explorers trying to win glory for themselves and their country, you know, doing a stunt like going across the Antarctic. Right. These guys were fishermen in a voyage that went very bad. And they were just trying to make a living from their standpoint, and here they were.
How do we know about the fate of the Essex? Where does the information come from, and how did people back then understand what happened
to the Essex? Yeah, well, you know, quickie journalism is nothing new. Owen Chase, the first mate, came back to Nantucket on June 11th, 1821, you know, within a year of all of this. And by that fall, with the help of a ghostwriter, he had written and published what is one of the great true narratives of the narrative of the Essex. And that got out there. There was, even before that, though, when Captain Pollard was found in his own whale boat, he spoke that night to a group of whaling captains who had gathered on a ship, a gam. And Captain Paddock would record. It's almost, you know, a transcript of what he told them. And it's just amazing. He goes into the detail of the cannibalism, their sufferings. And that Paddock letter went out, was copied, and that was the first word. And so those are the two essential sources when it comes to the story of the Essex.
What was it that led to Chase's survival, and what were the skills that were required once you were alone on the sea?
Well, if I had to have been on a whale boat, I would want to have been on Chase's. He was wired to be a whaleman, what was known as a fishy man, very tough, very driven. And, you know, he was good at getting what he wanted, even if the decisions he was making weren't the right ones at the time. He had the fortitude to keep going. In a survival situation, for example, it looked like they were going to die of dehydration, and they wash up on an island almost 3,000 miles off South America where they're trying to get to. And they find water. they find birds and birds' eggs. So it's okay. But they realize after a few weeks that they're clear-cutting this place. They're going to starve to death eventually. And they find skeletons of people who have been there. And he's the one who says, look, we can't stay here. We have to keep going. And, you know, can you imagine this? You know, they've almost died already. And they're in the middle of nowhere. And he says, let's get in those boats and go to South America, thousands of miles away. And they agree with him. And they do it. And the boats would all get separated. One would be never found again. Pollard's boat would be reduced to just two guys, Pollard and a teenager, and they would be found sucking the bones of their dead shipmates. And Chase and two others would survive, make it basically to the Massafure, an island, you know, right off the coast. And, you know, he just was incredibly, I think, charismatic in his way and driven. And yet, you know, the ordeal stayed with him. Late in life, the headaches that had plagued him ever since his time in the whale boats would come back to him, and he would start hiding food in the attic of his house and eventually be judged insane. And so this
PTSD.
Is, yeah.
Even
back yeah, then. Absolutely.
Right.
It's interesting, though. One of the sources that was very helpful to me was a relatively newly found account by the cabin boy, Thomas Nickerson. And Nickerson, late in life, wrote his account. And he had talked to the other survivors, clearly had read Chase's account. He's an old man looking back. And in his account, which is in this wonderful composition book at the Nantucket Historical Association,
wow.
He claims they had enough bread to survive. He could not, late in life, admit to having been a cannibal, which, you know, that's the thing about narratives. They're all self-serving in some form. Mm. Chase was an officer trying to put a bad voyage in the best possible light. Nickerson was an old man trying to put his sufferings in a way that, you know, he did not demean himself in the most unspeakable crime. And that's, you know, as a historian, you got to sift through that and try to come up with your best concept of what actually happened.
Nathaniel Philbrick, thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Nathaniel Philbrick is the author of In the Heart of the Sea. The film adaptation of his book, starring Chris Hemsworth, is in theaters on Friday.